You're having a good time on the couch with your friends. You're having a good time in the bed alone. You're having a good time watching TV. Let us ruin your day. Yay!
Welcome to Now It's Ruined, the podcast for people who hate enjoying things. I'm Kate Bridal.
And I'm Larkin Harrington.
And today we are being joined by a brand new guest, the amazing Rhea Batchelder, who is here to ruin New Year's resolutions for us. Rhea is an attorney and the CEO of Rebuild with Rhea Coaching and Consulting, the organization she built to end the burnout crisis. She provides corporate culture consulting, speaking, and training for organizations while acting as an anti-burnout career coach for high achievers. She also advocates for lasting changes to American work culture with a clear mission. Work can and should feel better. And she also happens to be the former co-host of mine on our old podcast, The Legal Burnouts, which is how I knew she'd be absolutely fabulous for this. So Rhea, thank you so much for joining us. We're so excited.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be back recording with you, Kate, and to be here with Larkin for the very first time, and to ruin New Year's resolutions. Honestly, this research was quite fun, and so I'm excited to talk about it.
I'm so stoked.
I got the text from Rhea when we were like setting this up, and she was like, I'm pretty sure I can find something to be negative about.
I did.
So. Mission accomplished. So we'll get into that very shortly. Super quick, short and sweet housekeeping. Follow us on Patreon, Instagram, and YouTube. Support us on Patreon if you feel so inclined. Rate and review us on whatever platform you're listening on right now. And of course, please continue to tell your friends and your enemies about this show. And speaking of enemies,
yes,
on our latest bonus episode, Larkin and I decided that we should start asking our guests who would they like to fight in a Denny's parking lot in hell? 3 to 5 people. Just, you know, as a kind of an icebreaker. The Now It's Ruined equivalent of who would you invite to dinner? We need to retroactively ask Erica, but I did ask Rhea today, and I cannot wait, Rhea, to hear your answers.
Yeah, I mean, mine are obvious, right? It's Donald Trump. Peter Thiel, Nick Fuentes, Marco Rubio.
Wait, okay, yes.
You don't know who Nick Fuentes is?
I'm sure I do, but I'm paying way less attention now just for the sake of my mind and
yeah, that's
brain.
Fair. He's like a tiny little right-wing freak who says terrible things about women and is a horrible anti-Semite. Like,
okay,
he's very popular.
I've definitely heard his name.
Okay, wait, how many do I have? I have Donald Trump, Nick Fuentes, Peter Thiel,
Marco Rubio.
Marco Rubio, for sure. Like,
for sure.
Again, just a little short stack that I just know I could win against and would be horrified to be beaten by a woman like all of these people. I would say Elon Musk is my number 5.
Oh, okay. Word. Ones. All current. I like it. Most of ours are in the deep past. We're like, Christopher Columbus is going down, you know.
Mine are very much the architects of the downfall of America right now. I honestly think I would win every single fight as well.
I 100% believe
that.
It.
Even though I am 5'2", you should know about me that I am also a little crazy.
Yeah, we never factor in if we would win or not. But Larkin's like, I'm fighting Ben Roethlisberger and I'm going to die.
I don't care. I will die a second death.
It's in hell. You're already dead. What do you have to lose?
I'll just get punted down to a different section or something and then start it up again.
Wow, you used a football term and everything.
Yeah.
Hey.
Meet back at the line of scrimmage.
All right. Well, thank you so much for indulging
You're
that.
Welcome.
That was great choices. That's all I have. So without further ado, I'm going to let you take it away and ruin New Year's resolutions for us.
So pleased to have the honor. Okay. What is very unsurprising about this to me is that the origin of New Year's resolutions is religion. Mm. That, you know, really checked out immediately. What was surprising to me is it is an ancient practice. And by ancient, I mean ancient. So the first recorded New Year's resolutions date back to 2000 BC, nearly 4,000 years ago. Ancient Babylonians were known to set New Year's resolutions. Their new year started in March, which, you know, made sense, right? Because they were an agricultural society, and really the new year kicked off when it was time to start planting crops. At the same time, there was this big religious element. So they had this festival that started on the first new moon after the spring equinox. So every year on the first new moon in spring, a Kitu, their religious festival, would kick off, and it is 12 days long, and it centered around a god Marduk, who apparently was Babylon's chief god, and it was celebrating the creation of the universe. So very religious. The myth of Marduk was that he created the world in 12 days after he killed his female rival and created Earth and the heavens out of her dismembered carcass.
This is very Norse creation myth. We just talked about that on the Christmas. Yeah. In the Norse creation myth, it's brothers who tore apart a giant and made the earth out of his blood and his skull and stuff. Mm. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, like very violent and also very patriarchal. We already started with a woman being murdered and used for parts. Classic. So
yeah, classic religious myth.
Classic religion. So there was this 12-day festival where Babylonians would basically offer sacrifices to Marduk, saying, you know, like, we will be good for this next year. Please bring us bountiful crops. Like, that was really what they were trying to do. They were trying to get favor from the gods by making certain promises. And they thought if they broke the promises, they would face the wrath of God in the form of bad weather, incest. Did I just say incest?
That sounds like something that would get you in trouble.
Sure did. Okay.
One would hope.
Bad weather, insects, like anything that would ruin the crops, right?
Larkin was like, I didn't even know where
different.
It was going.
Yeah. Different word. And a common resolution they actually had was to like return borrowed farm equipment and to repay their debts. That was like very often what they came to offer to the gods. So like these resolutions were more like promises to God, right? Don't hurt me. I'll be good. Please don't starve me and my family.
Please don't hurt me.
You know, that was really the premise. Also during this time, it was said that Babylonian kings every year, because, okay, during a Kitu, they also either they crowned a new king of Babylon or they reaffirmed the allegiance to their old king. So this was also a time like where they set the leader for the new year. And apparently the Babylonian king would like kneel and offer these almost like negative resolutions. Like, I did not destroy Babylon. I did not harm my people. I did not betray the farming culture, stuff like that. And would almost like state his worthiness again in front of Marduk to continue to be the ruler of Babylon and the people. So that was also thought to be like an early form of someone in power, like making resolutions on the new year. However, some scholars actually debate whether this happened or if people who were pissed off about like Babylonian ruling class started spreading this rumor that every year the kings would be forced to do this kind of like humility exercise. So we don't know. There's some like debate, but just wanted to raise it.
I like it too, because it's the whole like religion thing of like, I'm being nice because I don't want a bad thing to happen to me. Not just to be nice or because it's the right thing to do. It's just like, oh yeah, sure. I won't steal my neighbor's plow because then the gods will be mad at me.
I know. It's like, I was going to say the bar is on the floor. Like, I guess I'll return my borrowed goods.
Right. It was a fear-based practice is what it was.
Right. Yeah.
It was based on like, we think these gods are wrathful and vengeance is going to come upon us if we don't act in the way that we're supposed to.
And the king just has to say what he didn't do. Yeah.
Right. That was the first practice. And then we get to ancient Rome. Circa 46 BC, Julius Caesar is involved. He changed the calendar to start at January 1. So he was the first one to kind of make that shift. And January was already very significant for ancient Romans because it was named after a two-faced god named Janus. And if you look up pictures of this god, he has like a face that goes to the front and one up the back of his head. So he was thought to kind of inhabit doorways, arches, hallways, and have the wisdom of looking forward and backwards, right? So seeing the past and also being able to see the future. So Romans during January would worship Janus and offer sacrifices and promises to him. And because Janus was known to kind of have this reflective quality of future past, That's what the promises were really centered around. So reflecting on the previous year and also thinking about how you wanted to show up in the future. So this is really where this like practice starts to take hold, right? I thought that was just like cool, the image of the god and like how that practice started. When you look up a picture of him, I was like, oh, makes so much sense.
I found it really creepy imagery though, picturing a two-faced, a man with a face on the front and the back of his head standing in a doorway.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
It's not like Voldemort. You know, more like a statue kind of looked cool when you look it up. So I was like, okay, this makes sense. And the face looking forward was supposed to, or looking back was supposed to represent memory and experience. And the face looking forward, hope and anticipation. In ancient Rome, they often thought about January 1 as a time to really like start the year off right. So for example, there is the Roman poet Ovid writes about this, and he really like highlighted that the practice was about bringing positivity to the day with the idea that if we're positive on this day, we are likely to experience fortune for the rest of the year. So he wrote, "A prosperous day dawns. Favor our thoughts and speech. Let auspicious words be said on this auspicious day." And it also was said that ancient Romans would go to work on the first day of the year because they thought that that indicated that they would have a really bountiful, prosperous, productive year. So it was really, really for them about, hey, let's start this off right. Everything you do on January 1 and the rest of the month really matters because Janus is watching. We are honoring him by being really, really, really reflective.
And by going to work.
And by going, right. Because again, like, these people were living in stressful times without a lot of resources. And so much of their life revolves around, will there be enough food? Will we as a society survive? And so a lot of their practices centered around like trying to have hope for that.
Kate's like creeped out by Janus the whole time. I'm just like picturing this like Gen X woman named Janus that everyone's just like, God damn it, Janus again. Don't piss Janus off, you know.
Don't. She's looking down. She can see you.
Is she looking down the hallway again? God damn
it. She's very nosy.
Yeah. Are you working? Like, if you got
you
time
work
to clean,
this
you got
year?
Time to clean.
But it's an interesting point of their focus on productivity being out of necessity, because Larkin and I have talked about this a lot of like, all of these are like the Vikings included had this like, the more productive you are, the better you are kind of attitude, which is so capitalist. But it's like in those days it made sense because if you didn't push yourselves, you might not literally have enough food for everybody. But it just has held over into our society now when it doesn't need to be that way anymore.
Exactly. Okay, so then after ancient Rome, we have various cultures who had their own special celebrations set on various times from December to March. So there was still some variation on, hey, when do we do this reflective time? But pretty much across the world, there were practices of some sort that looked like a New Year's resolution or New Year's celebration, or at least a reflection. For example, in Ireland, there was a practice that you really wanted to clean your house on the first of the year. And that was the way that you would like bring luck into your home. I was like, that's kind of nice. Like just like a little setting yourself up. Maybe I'm being influenced by propaganda though. However, we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then in like Colombia, Ecuador, and other parts of Latin America, families would stuff a life-size male doll with memories of the outgoing year. So they would like put in all these memories and then dress it in their clothing and set it afire and have this like big bonfire kind of like indicating a closure to the previous year, a closure to previous behavior, a closure to bad memories, etc. So it's less of like a resolution practice, but more of like a separation from previous behavior.
I just looked at Larkin's face and she was like, I know. Like did not, she didn't care but for intense. The man-sized
now
effigy.
It's turning, because once you said burning, like then I was like, okay, yeah, let's stuff a dude full of things we don't want anymore. Let's cleanse the room and burn them on fire.
It is strange that it was like an entire man-shaped dummy thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of memories.
I like that practice. I think that's more cool. They weren't as focused on productivity or like bringing fortune to themselves. It felt more like reflective and community-based And so we love that. Good job, Latin America.
Yeah. Nice. It feels more cleansing, more like.
Yeah. Less like prescriptive.
What are we letting go of kind of deal? Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Okay. And then we have the early Christians who latched on to this practice. Mm-hmm. As they do. So the founder of Methodism, John Wesley, he created the Covenant Renewal Service, which involved reading from scripture and hymn reading right before the new year. And this was also a time to kind of get together and commit to God and to being a better follower of God. And apparently, this is one I wanted to mention because these services are called watch night services and are still very, very popular in evangelical Protestant churches in America. So like that practice completely held on throughout the church, and they will still have like night watch services. And then one that is really fun is that in the Middle Ages, medieval kings would renew their vow to chivalry every year by placing their hands on a peacock. And this was dubbed the peacock vow. And it took place at the end of every year. So that was a special New Year's resolution. Just
what a fun,
four
sexy
nights.
Time.
Larkin, what did you think she was going to say before she said peacock?
Tits.
Yeah. Tits?
Like, honestly, really, I really was like, it's going to be something
just, like every year you get to grab a boob, but then you then you have to really come back and get back on your shoulder.
Realign.
Like, cannot believe they called it the peacock vow. Like, what? Yeah, what? Are you talking about?
Well, you
about?
Know what you're getting.
This
what
is like in history books. Like I found this in numerous sources. I was like, what?
That's incredible.
I just imagine everyone standing around and like the peacock's there and he's like, what the fuck is going on right now? And all the knights are kneeling and just touching it.
Stroking
like,
him.
Yeah. And like, just saying, I vow.
I want to see a peacock vow gone wrong. Like with the peacock that's just not having
peacocks
it.
Peacocks are wild birds. So yeah. I don't really, I want to see this as well. And I'm wondering why we haven't seen more like movie recreations of a peacock vow.
And peacocks are loud. So they're just like so just
true.
Shrieking peacocks.
Just in the middle of it.
Just the imagery. And they're
alone.
Like in chains, right? Like these are the knights.
Yeah, chainmail,
So I imagine they're just like, ooh, like it's so complex. Doesn't make any
clanking
sense.
Around. Like no music, just clanking
and they're
touching
just, like,
the bird.
Trying to fucking,
and the bird
someone's
being like,
holding the peacock still. And everyone's watching. Just, what? So that was what they were doing in the Middle Ages for resolutions. Just the peacock vow, really, outside of church.
Wow.
I'm going to start doing that instead of resolutions. Find me a peacock immediately.
Find me a peacock, and then I'll make a resolution. If I'm not touching a peacock, get them away from me. So then we get more into modern times. And the very first time we kind of have the word New Year's resolution used was in 1671. We have a diary entry from a Scottish writer, Anne Halkett, who has an entry that was titled Resolutions, and then like a list of things, and this is written on January 2nd. So this is the first time we see like a New Year's resolution list named resolution. They were mainly taken from biblical verses. So like, I will not offend anymore. Stuff like that. It kind of indicates to scholars that this may have been a widespread practice at the time. Probably in the 1600s, more people were doing this. And then in 1802, we have this kind of funny article from Walker's Hiberian magazine that was poking fun at the efficacy of New Year's resolutions. And I thought this was interesting because, again, it's like one of the first references we have to New Year's resolutions, and it's dogging them. It's saying, like, this is bullshit. Okay, so this is what the article says. The following personages have begun the year with a string of strong resolutions, which they all solemnly pledge to keep before enumerating a series of obviously fictitious resolutions. So this was like satire. Statesmen women have resolved to have no other object in view than the good of their country. The physicians mm-hmm. have determined to follow nature in her operations and to prescribe no more than is necessary and be very moderate in their fees. ... So, yeah, I know. True sass. Oof. In saying, like, people make these resolutions and they don't mean them. They don't follow through with them. They're just things that we say to feel good about ourselves, to feel like we are good people, and to make other people think that we intend on being good.
The doctor thing.
Yeah, I know. My doctor charged me high fees last year, and I'm pissed.
A legacy, though, being shown of doctors overprescribing and overcharging.
Interesting threads that carry on. So then the resolutions come to the United States with none other than the Puritans, who settled in the both of your reactions to that.
We've dealt with the Puritans a lot on this.
I know, me too. That's how I felt when I was I was like, of course. And John Cotton's involved. I've written about the Puritans for reproductive rights history, like how a lot of the movement seeking to control women in life was really born by these people. So lots of feelings that I have. for the listeners who aren't as familiar, they were really about like being as pure, as good as you could to be a servant of God. Don't drink alcohol, don't sin, don't curse, don't, you know, engage in prostitution. They were anti-debauchery of any kind. If it feels good, don't do it. So this makes sense when it comes to New Year's resolutions, right? Because Puritans really, really sought to control their congregation and their followers. Every New Year, on the first Sunday of the New Year, Puritan churches would have a Sabbath sermon, which often highlighted at the time that time is fleeting and congregants really needed to be better servants of God and they needed to take the time to reflect on how they were failing. This was a shaming practice, right? It was about making people feel like you're not good enough. You need to do better. How can you do better? Let us count the ways. Let us count the flaws. Let's make a list. Let's feel bad. Let's atone. So that really was like the root of resolutions in America, because that was the culture that really like brought the practice here.
Let's feel bad and atone is very
that's,
like,
I'm like, that
summed
be Rhea's,
up the Puritan philosophy.
Rhea's like, merch is Happy New Year's, let's feel bad and atone.
Let's feel bad and atone for all the times we didn't respond to an email immediately, right?
Are you a woman?
Yeah, right.
Feel
that's
bad,
not
atone.
Good. Don't be that.
We like the way you look and that means you're evil. We don't like that. Yeah. Get out of here.
We don't like that at all. So we see in diaries from early Americans that they were writing resolutions. And it was, again, like, I resolve to. Often, like, I resolve to abstain from alcohol. Apparently, people were really struggling with the booze back then and trying to get off of it all the time and were not successful. So there was a lot of diary entries resolving to abstain from the alcohol or saying, I'm resolved to do X, Y, Z this year. I'm resolved to gossip less this year. So stuff like that.
What is there to do back then except drink and gossip? I mean, like, what else?
I know.
What
is
left?
Well, go to church.
Praying.
Go to church and work,
praying.
According to Puritans.
Mm-hmm. Pray and work. Sorry. Of course. But yeah. I mean, even if you're praying and working, that's a lot of...
There's extra time. Like, the sun goes down. They didn't have a ring light. So I assume
that's
that
when
would
you start
be a
praying,
nice time
I
to
guess.
Drink. Right. And apparently why people were struggling with it at the time. So it's interesting. Yeah. And the gossiping thing also came up a lot. So apparently gossiping was like a big issue that they were also trying to get away from.
I wonder how much of that was levied against women when it's just like, is it gossip or is it just women talking to each other and being like, is this system kind of bullshit? Like, what is, 100%. You know, if the more women talk, the more they're going to start realizing maybe stuff isn't that great. And then, like, who knows what's going to happen, right? So you can't have gossiping happen.
Can't have gossiping happen, especially not among the property or the non-property owners. We don't want them.
Right.
We don't want them speaking. But I'm pretty sure Puritans all form schools for both women and men, though. Like, they taught their girls how to read.
Well, they had to be able to read the Bible, right?
Yes.
Because they're not Catholic anymore.
Yeah, so yeah. Everybody's allowed to read the Bible now.
Well, that's exactly right. They actually wanted their own people to be able to read the Bible, so they weren't relying on the interpretations of, like, right. English priests because they had just separated from the church. Okay, so then in 1813, we get New Year's resolution for the first time in print as a phrase. It's not just resolutions, it's New Year's resolutions. And once again, it's in a sassy article. So we see this in a Boston newspaper in a short article titled The Friday Lecture, which said, "And yet, I believe there are multitudes of people accustomed to receive injunctions of New Year's resolutions who will sin all the month of December with a serious determination of beginning the new year with new resolutions and new behavior, and with the full belief that they shall thus expiate and wipe away all of their former faults." So once again, a little tongue-in-cheek, this is a bullshit practice. Y'all are going to be drinking and prostituting all of December. And then make your resolutions Jan 1 and pretend like you're a new man.
You're going to go to the gym for 1 week, and we know this. My bakery closes for 2 weeks in January because we know that it's going to last 2 weeks. Every year we've done this.
You'll be back.
You'll be back in 2 weeks saying, "Where's my cinnamon roll?"
I went to the gym for 2 weeks and I'm so hungry.
So like all throughout this time, throughout the 1900s, really resolutions were religious, spiritual, mainly centering around developing a stronger moral character, stronger work ethic, or more restraint in the face of pleasures. The booze and the ladies.
And gossip.
And gossip, right.
If they could have seen reality TV. It's all the things. It's ladies drinking booze and gossiping in front of each other and behind each other's backs.
100%. For many our entertainment. Many earthly pleasures. I'm going to bring us out of history to modern times and why we hate resolutions. And we'll give you a little advice on if you want to make them, how to do it in a way that's less rooted in all of this shame and atonement and patriarchy and control as we are seeing this practice really developed from, which are things that we don't like, which are things that we don't need to be bringing into our own lives, right? No, absolutely Mm-mm. not. Now that you know where they came from, it's a little less appealing besides the peacock vow, obviously.
We all are going to go out and make the peacock vow this year. That's what we just started.
Where do peacocks come from?
I think they're originally from like warmer areas like India and stuff.
They must be in Europe too, right?
Well, I think they took them back there during Crusades or whatever, probably.
Yeah.
And scream.
And they scream.
And they scream.
Yeah. That's a great peacock. Good job.
Thank you so much.
Bird lady.
Okay, so modern day New Year's resolutions. Back to what we're talking about here. They're actually quite popular in America now. So there was a poll that shows about 44% of Americans are likely to make resolutions every year, New Year's resolutions, and compare this with only 12 to 18% of Swedish people, which is like quite a big difference. So I do think that there's, again, something to be said about American culture and the way that we see ourselves as a constant, something to be picked apart, right? Analyzed, assessed for flaws, which is really the issue that like I want us to close on. If you are listening to us, you may feel pressure with the start of a new year to think about all the things, all the ways you want to be different, all the things that you didn't get done this year, all your quote-unquote failures, all your quote-unquote flaws, and make a big list of them. And we'll talk about like if you want to do this, like a healthy way to do it in a second. But the problem with this is it almost always can cause shame. Shame is a stressor. It is something that causes procrastination, avoidance, shutdown, isolation, mental health problems. When we are actually trying to reach big goals, live a more fulfilled life, be better people, in quotes, be more like the people we want to be, right? Show up in the world the way you want to. Doing it from a place of shame is almost always going to be cause a lot of friction and do the opposite of what you want to do. True success, true fulfillment, true like healthy interpersonal dynamics and being a real part of the community requires you to regard yourself highly. Mm. And what's important is as you're doing this process, like you can have goals. I have goals for this year. Just being so careful about the way you're framing it, the way you're talking about yourself. Like, for example, I had a big dream to start a podcast 1 year. But that is not a shameful resolution. It was a goal. And I wasn't like, and here are all the things wrong with me that are keeping me from that goal. If I were to set a resolution, it would be like, be kinder to myself, love on myself more, right? Like that is the thing that often helps us show up more productively, ironically, show up as better friends, volunteer more because we're in shame spirals less, just all of these things. So take New Year's resolutions and the practice with a major grain of salt. And I think the most important thing we can all be doing is like watching your thoughts, watching your intention, watching where you're coming from, watching kind of like what the implicit statement of your resolution is, right? Like if it is a statement that's kind of saying I'm not enough as is, maybe back away from that this year. We collectively have been through a brutal year of horrible news, changing climate, terrible economy, raising prices, war, destruction. I do not think this is a time to hold ourselves to incredibly high standards. And if this year didn't look like how you wanted it to, maybe something that we can all promise ourselves in the next year is like, I'm going to be flexible with myself when life throws me a left hook, when the worst people in the world, all of my top five fight you in a Denny's parking lot in hell, are currently devastating us, right? And I think especially in the context of what's going on, how stressful it is, how much like weight it has brought to many of our lives and our days, I really think this is a year to be extra cautious about putting more on our plates and especially more burdens, more thoughts about like, I should be doing more. I should be better. I should be further along by now. This is just not the time to do that. You survived this year. And I think what we all need more of is self-compassion, kindness, gentleness, ease. So on the flip side, just going to throw this out there for my people who are like, I'm still going to fucking do it. I don't care. Peacock vow be damned. I'm doing my list. Here's some insight from psychologists again. Avoid anything that can imply shame. And we also want to avoid really lofty goals that if you do not meet them, you're going to have a shame spiral about. Right. So things like I'm going to go to the gym every single month, like very specific, lofty, or every single day or whatever, really specific, lofty goals that you can kind of track and measure and shame yourself for not meeting are dangerous. Mm. So that is something to really watch out for versus like, I'd really like to be a little more active this year, maybe find a sport that really aligns with me, is super fun. I want to make movement fun again. Like that's a different kind of resolution. Like it's less trackable and less shameable. Yeah. There is also a 2020 study on the efficacy of New Year's resolutions. There isn't a ton of like good research on the efficacy of New Year's resolutions, which I thought was interesting. I mean, there are a couple studies, but I just thought there would be more for,
yeah,
again, like this ancient 4,000-year-old practice. So in this study, there were a couple control groups and people were offered some different advice in terms of like how to set goals and different social support. And one of the things that they found is if you're setting a goal, we want to focus on an approach-oriented goal. So like, again, I am going to focus on my health by like finding movement that really feels good to me this year. Maybe I'm going to like sign up for a co-ed softball league or whatever, like something like that. You're setting an approach for yourself versus an avoidance. So if you're saying, I will not smoke, I will not drink, I will not eat after 8 p.m., like I will not procrastinate, like those are very likely to fail and again, cause shame just because of the way our brains are set up. So if you're going to set a goal, go for a positive, achievable, non-shameful goal. And know that even in this study where people had social support and real like education on how to appropriately set goals that their minds could track, like according to neuroscience, only 58% of these people who self-selected into this group who said, I really want to do a New Year's resolution. So again, these are people who are more inclined. Only 58% consider themselves successful with following through. We cannot hold ourselves to a standard that no one is meeting. These are people who are like, yeah, I'm so ready to change. And a lot of like the research shows that that is a big element, right, of actual change too. Just like feeling ready for something new versus it's January 1, an arbitrary time. Start to change your life. Like that's not effective or helpful for people. But
right.
Again, there is this concept in neuroscience called like a fresh start theory. Like when your brain knows it's a Monday, when your brain knows it's the start of a new month, when your brain knows it's the start of a new year, there is a little more wiggle room to change behavior. And it's really just a thing that we are telling ourselves, right? It's
right.
created by us. Like Monday is the start of a new week. Like I'll start on Monday. I'll go to the gym on Monday. Oh, I already fell off my dieting thing this week, whatever. I don't diet. Like I'm just talking about normal resolutions that people say. I fell off, you know, whatever my diet this week, I'll start again on Monday. Like that is an actual neurological phenomenon. That's just like our brains see time in a certain way because we tell it. We give it that input. So if you really want to start a new habit or maybe like a self-care, self-love practice, something like that, something actually nice that's not centered around control, shame, patriarchy, and productivity, it could be nice like time to take advantage. But again, be very, 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 very careful. And again, like if you're going to set resolutions, track what your mind is doing as you watch those goals progress during the year. If you are shaming yourself, no more resolutions for you. They aren't for you. That's not working the way. That's not working the way. Yeah, go to the peacock and that's it. One peacock vow and then we're done. If you're the type of person, like for example, I feel like I've worked a lot on my self-shame. So I could like set some goals and if I'm not meeting them, I'm like, all right, whatever. You know, like that's okay. So like if you're in that kind of boat, proceed with caution if you feel into it. But again, keep in mind where all this came from and that it was really meant to be a way to control people, a way to avoid the wrath of God, whatever form that took. We don't need to be that own police force in our own life, right? Like we don't need to be the wrathful God in our own minds and set these sort of resolutions that keep this pressure up. I really don't think we do.
No, I agree.
No. It's really fascinating because we don't think about the fact that, yes, there are like weird reboot times in our lives because we have an arbitrary time system, you know, like we have a calendar, we have work weekdays, which that capitalist, productive, ingrained pattern in our lives and our bodies. Like, I like the idea of thinking about that and pushing back on it. I see nothing wrong with like a fresh start. A lot of people I know in my life actually look at their birthdays instead of the new year.
My birthday's right away in the new year. So I'm like,
yeah, I know yours is right there.
Freaking Capricorn.
Yeah. Just doing away with this, like, because it is just an arbitrary day. Sure. Yeah, the seasons are changing and things are like,
but they're not in January. That's why it like made more sense for the Babylonians to kick things off in March. Because it's like, that really is when things are changing, weather's changing, nature's kind of sprouting up.
Things starting anew in a way. Yeah.
Pick a solstice.
Exactly. Like the Babylonians, again, first new moon after the spring equinox. That's the ancient time. That's also like tracks astrology too, right? Like that's the start of the astrological new year.
Yeah.
So I agree. If you don't feel up for a new fresh start right now, you don't need to have one. It's pitch dark. It's not a time where you need to feel that way. Like you're kind of mentioning, Larkin, if you want to take advantage of that kind of part of our brain that makes it a little easier to change something, you can do that on any Monday. You can arbitrarily decide that March 1, March 15th is your day where you're going to do that, because really your brain is just making that fresh start thing based on input we're getting. So you can give it a different input.
I found it most effective if I'm just an impulsive fresh starter. So like this last time when I finally went back into the gym, it was like on a Thursday that I was like, I feel the motivation and I kind of – but the weird thing is I tried to talk back against it where I was like, oh, but then your routine's going to start on Thursday and that's awkward. And then you have the weekend, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, but I want to do it right now and I feel motivated. So that's what I'm going to do. But your brain will, with the arbitrary time stamp thing, try and push back on you and be like, but that doesn't make sense. You can't just do a fresh start on a Thursday. What's wrong with you?
Like, it's like, why not wait until Monday? It's like, well, that was just made up. Hello?
Ride it right. when you're Hello? Feeling it, man.
Like, it is kind of crazy how these like confinements feel like they trap us when really you can just decide to start lifting weights on a Thursday if you'd like.
At 8 p.m. if that's when it hits you. There's a 24-hour fitness somewhere near you.
And then it will be less crowded than January 1.
Right.
That too.
And I think too, like the arbitrariness of January, I think just really the amount of people who don't follow through with their resolutions is just like – it's a tough time of year to really be starting right. something new. Especially as the 1813 Bostonian newspaper said, like, everyone's sinning all of December, drinking, eating cookies. Like, who's ready to come out of that after you've been in, like, a sugar high for 3 weeks straight and be like, oh, I'm ready to change my whole life? No, I'm not.
No. It's unrealistic, and it sets you up for that shame spiral, which is, like, no wonder – our culture is the way it is. No, what, like, we've set ourselves up in so many ways to shame spiral and then be angry and snippy and unhappy and mean. Like, the people are the most mean to service workers, like, around this time and around New Year's, because they're crabby, they're cranky,
they're hangry.
They're hangry. They're going to the gym. They don't want to be.
They just need less pressure, less stress is what most of us need. And ironically, resolutions are unlikely to bring that.
And now I'm just thinking about how, like, keeping us in that cycle of shame is advantageous for, like, corporate America, because they can use it so easily to make us go back to the office or make us do, you know, blah, blah, blah. Apart from the threat of, like, you might not work anymore. And there's that element. But it's like the thing of how people take fewer vacation days when they actually have unlimited PTO because they feel guilty for taking time, especially if their boss isn't taking the time or their coworkers aren't taking the time. And so lots of companies offer unlimited PTO because they know it will actually benefit them and will get them more work out of their workers.
Shame.
So crazy.
Shame.
And it really is like the more we all focused on becoming our best selves all the time and like treating ourselves like a project, the less we are in community connecting. Forming bonds, seeing that we are stronger together, organizing, all of these things, the less time we have to watch the news, hold people accountable. You know, if we're in our own heads trying to perfect ourselves at all times, like what are we missing out on? And I think in America, at least, the answer is a lot. And now, especially, is a time where we should be out in community, even if you don't feel perfect, even if you don't feel ready, even if you don't feel self-actualized and complete and fully grown, which does that ever happen? I'm not sure. I'm 35, still got a long ways to go. What are we telling ourselves, right, about like the pursuit of perfection and when we get to be happy and celebrated and what milestones, habits, routines we need to have in order to feel good enough. And like, how does that hold us back? It's just something to think about too. I think we spend a lot of time shaming with anxious thoughts about ourselves and what people think about us and all that stuff. We have been taught to do that in America. I do think it's very intentional, especially for women. Because like, if you are so focused on counting your calories and starving and running on a treadmill, you don't have a lot of time to think about who the fuck told you to do that and why. And when you internalize that, and if maybe you're actually way more powerful than you ever thought, and people are trying to point out your flaws to make you feel less confident, less powerful, and to occupy that space in your brain that may otherwise be thinking about a matriarchal society. So just something to think about.
Let women gossip. That's what I'm here to say.
Let women into the streets. Let women think about themselves less. Let women live. Yeah. Let women
and each other
be flawed like, and each other.
Because we're also trained to pick each other apart.
Yeah, right. And like, especially with the rise of social media, right? Like, we just know.
Oh my God, that's what I was thinking.
More than
about,
ever. Yeah. More than ever, we are picking ourselves apart, comparing ourselves, judging ourselves. Yeah. And it is really hard not to do that when you're seeing highlight reels from other people who aren't posting their low moments and all of that stuff. And you're thinking, oh, well, they have all this. And you don't see what's going on in their house, obviously. And so it's just like when you think about the overall context of our society in so many different ways. And again, like where this practice comes from. Maybe we just skip it this year.
Yeah. And it gives us the platform, social media, to, like I said, kind of like do it to each other too. Cause it's like this thing that I saw so much, especially like right after the election, where it's like someone speaks out about one cause and a million people are piling on, like, oh, so you don't care about X, Y, Z. And it's like, people, none of us are pure. None of us are ever going to be. None of us have the capacity or the ability to care about every single thing equally. And a lot of us care about a lot of things very deeply, but we also don't have the time to speak about them all equally. And it's like, it just makes us cannibalize ourselves.
I agree. Moral perfectionism, engaging in perfectionism in general is rubber stamping this sort of cultural backslide that we are experiencing, at least in America. That's really scary. So it's maybe my resolution will be dress sluttier. Twerk more.
Yeah.
Be bitchy.
Work.
I like
this. If you're going to resolve anything, let's resolve to be more of a thorn in the side of patriarchy.
Let's be bitches.
And systems that are trying to control us and pick us apart. Resolve to reject all of that.
Yes.
Snaps.
Well, thank you so much. This was so educational and interesting.
I know. I actually like really enjoyed looking into this. Good. Like, in ancient Rome, it was quite fun. So thank you guys for inviting me.
You know what I thought of this entire time is that in Japan for New Year's, you pray at a temple and you ask for good luck, whatever. And then usually there's wishes or fortunes that you tie to a tree.
That's cute.
But then there's like the luck gamble. And you get to pull basically your fortune for the year.
Oh.
They range from like super luck to like dump on your life. Like this year is about to suck for you. You're not going to achieve anything. You're not, the woman you love is going to leave you. And you basically like sit with that. You're like, oh, shit. I got shit luck for the year. Like that's. Rough.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right? I mean, that's like psychologically, we know if you tell your brain that, like you are more likely to act in ways that make that true. So what?
Right.
That would devastate me. It's I could not brutal. Go to that. I would stress so much. Like I have my stomach is like, no. And then you just go through the entire year like, well, nothing good's going to happen for me anyways. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
The life is very hard. And in my view, the only way to go through it is like with insane optimism for
that's the only way to survive
the only way,
a hint of delusional optimism
delusional
good for everyone.
Don't go into this new year shitting on yourself, man. Comparison is the killer of joy.
It's really not the time, you know.
It's not I mean, has it ever? But also
no, right, really
right now
not.
No
especially not. Really not.
We just really need to have our own backs this year, in my view. I think that's the most important.
Yes.
And each other's. And to get out of this like individualistic perfectionism thing and to just get out there and start trying to make the world a better place with people that we like and we love and we don't know and we care about.
Absolutely. And if you want to start working on that for yourself and you want more advice like this, go follow Rhea because she gives of this fantastic advice on Instagram and TikTok. She gives it out for free. You can also hire her, though, if you are looking to do something a little more substantial. You know, if you're looking to kind of work on your perfectionism and work on burnout, you can pay her to do that stuff. And she's fantastic.
You can pay me if you're thinking about leaving your job. If you want to find something that's actually aligned, I can help you with that. If you're forced to stay in your job because the job market sucks and you want to figure out how to survive and not burn out, I can help you with that. And like Kate said, if you want to implement some new routines, habits, take care of yourself a little better, that's one of the things I do with my clients too. And I am very strict about no shaming, no perfectionism, no unrealistic goals. In my view, avoiding the sort of flip side of a thing like a New Year's resolution is essential to growth and like confidence and happiness. So that's really the approach I take with my clients too, which is why it made sense that I was going to hate this because I was like, any sort of shaming and perfectionism is so, so something that I do not fuck with, especially for women. So I can help you with that in a way that's very cheerleadery,
yes,
and respectful of yourself. And I always call my clients out when they're mean, and they're mean to themselves and they like say, can I have your little voice in my head being like, wait, no, I'm not allowed to beat myself.
I did that. I did that when Maria and I did the podcast together. She does it very gently. Like, she'll be like, no, we don't talk about ourselves that way. That's the one that stuck in my head was you said that to me. And because I was editing it, I heard it over and over. And I was like, it just became my like little internal thing that I started.
I'm like saying, this little creepy angel on people's shoulders. Like, be nice to yourself or you're a tool of patriarchy. Because that's really what it is. That's how I think about it, at least. I'm like, listen, self-shame
Who
is
are you
a
serving?
Patriarchal tool. Men. And no thank you. Right. So now I will stop. That's how I stopped dieting. I read a study about like controlling black women and then how, you know, young girls were starting to get this in their head and how patriarchy that benefits them. And I was like, oh, okay. Then I'll stop.
Great.
Then I'll be done. I'm done.
I do all my biggest change out of spite to patriarchy. So
I love
Hell yeah. And we all
do
should.
It out of spite, not shame. That's what we're after.
Yes.
Spite, not shame.
Spite, right? Not shame. Spite, anger, and gossip.
Yeah. And gossip. Yes. And debauchery. And debauchery.
And debauchery. Yes.
Let's have and a peacocks. Debaucherous, bitchy year.
Peacocky year.
Peacocky, just strutting.
Strutting and absolutely. Shaking ass and flipping off ice and not being a cop to our neighbors or people on the internet and not being a cop to ourselves.
Love it.
Word.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Rhea. Thank you for joining
welcome.
Us.
Thank you guys that for having me.
Gorgeous and perfect.
We will catch you next time when Larkin will be doing something to ruin my birthday. And I think we're going to be recording it when she's here visiting me soon. So we're going to be together looking at each other in the face. So that'll be fun. In the both eyes. Have a very happy new year. Shame-free as much as you can do it.
Shame-free.
We love you. Tell your friends. Tell your enemies. Make your resolution to listen to Rhea's voice, to go follow her, and to listen to more Now It's Ruined. It's a great resolution.
Yes, that would be a great resolution. One that's achievable and realistic. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
So, and approach-oriented. So.
Exactly. Thank you, Rhea. Love that.
Thank you all.
All right.
Bye. Fuck the patriarchy.